I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, after former President Donald Trump's decisive victory in Iowa, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party says working with any Republican is off the table. Plus, amid a cold snap, lawmakers push forward on a bill to phase out natural gas, and the Police Pursuit Initiative just hit a big blue roadblock in Olympia.
There are 38 yeas, 58 nays, 2 excused.
The motion is not adopted.
That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Some breaking news off the top of the show. If you listen closely, listen in. Do you hear that? Do you hear that sound? If you listen closely, you can hear the soft weeping of Governor Jay Inslee in a corner of his office in Olympia. Because just now, we got word that the Secretary of State's office has certified the initiative to repeal Governor Inslee's precious Climate Commitment Act. The initiative, of course, is Initiative 2117, which would stop the hidden gas tax, which is really what this is. Governor Inslee's Climate Commitment Act has led to a carbon tax that is increasing the prices at the pump as much as 50 cents per gallon. That's only going to get worse. So more than 400,000 Washington voters decided to do something about it, put together an initiative. So what happens from here? Well, the initiative is going to go to lawmakers in Olympia. It is first and foremost an initiative to the legislature, and they're not going to do anything with it. There is absolutely no way that Democrats in Olympia adopt an initiative that would repeal one of our three-term governors' biggest priorities when it comes to what he says is a bill that addresses climate change. We know he just puts these goals out there, never meets any of them, goes backward on some of them, claims victory. Well, you're not going to be able to claim victory on this one. Because if you can't come up with ways to help the environment, as we all want, without devastating working class people, then you're not trying hard enough or you don't care. I tend to think it's probably the latter. So this is the second initiative of the six that has now been certified by the Secretary of State's office. The other one, which was certified on Friday, which we'll talk about in a segment coming up, is the initiative that would restore reasonable police pursuit. So I just wanted to get you the good news off the top of the show today. Unusual that we start with national news, but there's a local angle on it, as there is a local angle on everything. Donald Trump devastated his doubters in Iowa in the caucuses yesterday. Looks like he's going to win 98 out of 99 counties in Iowa. And I think bigger than that is the fact that he got more than 50% of the vote. That's really significant, especially when you're talking about a field that has multiple candidates. That is as decisive gets. And so look, is Iowa the end-all be-all? No, but Iowa has been a pretty good indicator of what Republicans are going to do moving forward. And it is clear that Donald Trump has overwhelming support of a lot of Republicans. It's also, you know, Nicole and I were talking about this yesterday. It just shows you what an island we live on, you know, that would never happen here, even amongst Republicans. And it just shows you, I mean, it's fascinating to watch this sort of, I don't want to call it a comeback for Donald Trump, but he lost in 2020. And you see almost, I mean, what's happened from 2020 to 2024 now in 4 years, the sort of rally of support around him. Now, it's not the guy I want to vote for, that's for sure. But I think that there's a lot of reasons for that. Ron DeSantis came in second in the Iowa caucuses, and Nikki Haley came in third. Again, we'll cover some of the ins and outs of that coming up in national. But you've got this overwhelming support for Donald Trump in a state like Iowa. I think you're going to see it elsewhere as well. And then meanwhile, you've got Democrats in Washington State trying every trick in the book to get the guy's name off the ballot here, so he can't even be considered, which I think is a waste of time, because it doesn't, the votes that are going to go to Donald Trump in Washington State don't matter at all. They just don't. I mean, Donald Trump isn't going to win anything through Washington State at all. And so I see all these efforts from private citizens to party chairs, to Democratic lawmakers in Olympia, to try to get the guy's name off the ballot when it doesn't make a bit of a difference. And the way they're going about it is just terrifying, because to me, it's this slippery slope. It doesn't, you have to look at it through the lens of not whether you like a particular candidate, but whether we're going too far in giving people power and authority to be able to remove an option from the people. And I just think that's wrong. You know, there was a couple updates on this front. So you might have heard there were like 8 Kitsap County voters who took it upon themselves to try to force a court hearing on removing Donald Trump from the ballot here. I'm happy to report that the judge they brought that to in Kitsap County has declined to hear that case. That decision came today. That doesn't mean it's not going to be heard, though. He basically said, according to Como News, the judge said Kitsap County is the wrong venue. So he's going to punt it to Thurston County, which makes more sense because that's where the Secretary of State's office is. But these 8 Kitsap County residents, it says they're registered voters. They contest Trump's eligibility for the ballot based on an interpretation of the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution that cites his engagement in insurrection on January 6, 2021. Okay, fine. You know, if 8 voters in Kitsap were, again, Donald Trump has no relevancy here, want to spend their time trying to push a court case to get him removed from the ballot based on their wrong, in my opinion, interpretation of the Constitution, like, knock yourselves out. If that's how you want to spend your spring and your summer, go for it. But then there are more serious and, I guess, more credible efforts to try to do this in Washington State. We talked on the show, I think it was last week or maybe Friday or Monday. I lose track of my days, Nicole. There's so much going on politically. I talked about what I think is a perfect example of absolute power corrupting absolutely, and that is House Bill 2150. This is a bill being pushed by Democrats that would not only allow them to remove Donald Trump from the ballot, it would allow them to remove anyone from the ballot as long as there was a 2/3 vote to do so in the House and the Senate. Now, and I know people will say 2/3 is a lot. It is. But we talked on the show about Shasti Conrad's goal, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party. She said her goal was super majorities by 2026 in Washington. So the way we've been going with solidified Democrat control, they're only doing this because they believe they can get there. They're only pushing a bill that would allow lawmakers to remove anyone from the ballot with a supermajority because they believe they can get to a supermajority. And it's really scary stuff because there's nothing in the bill that says that in order for lawmakers to vote to remove them, they have to have violated XYZ. No, it's for any reason. Like, you could not like the color of the shirt or the tie that they're wearing. And if you've got a 2/3 vote, you could take them off. And there might be people who say, well, Brandy, that's hyperbole. They would never do that. They wouldn't. We've seen the direction that things are going, the consolidation of power. You have to look at every move that politicians make through the lens of worst case scenario. That's what you've always got to do. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to assume best intentions from lawmakers on the right or the left. I'm going to look at the bill for what it is and for what it could do and for how it can be interpreted and carried out in the hands of the wrong person. That's how we should look at everything. Now, I started with this because I wanted to build up to a tweet that was sent out last night after the Iowa results were clear from, again, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party. And when I first read it last night, I just couldn't help but be incredibly disappointed, obviously, but a little sad and defeated. And before I read it, you know, just to preface, man, we have so much going on in our state. We have so many crises that are killing people. We have people overdosing in record levels on our streets, and not just in blue areas, in red areas too. We have a drug and fentanyl that doesn't kill you based on your political ideology. We have crime, you know, at record levels across the state. Shootings and homicides. Just saw a record last year for homicides. We've got a mental health system that's in shambles, and people who are suffering mentally in ways that we could never imagine and that are so difficult to address. We have an affordability crisis in this state where we could You know, you could have two people in your home working full-time jobs, and the dream of home ownership seems so far away. There are so many pressing issues that have been getting worse. And I remember on the first day of the legislative session, the House Republican leader, Drew Stokesbury, he stood up and he said, hey, we don't care who gets credit for these ideas. We have ideas. We're bringing them to the table. We want to fix these things. And he laid out all these crises. And I saw this tweet from Shasti Conrad, and I thought about everything I just laid out. And it's devastating to me, this mindset. She sent out a tweet last night. It says, Trump is the Republican Party. Trying to work with the R's is siding with Trump. We know what we have to do and what we're up against. So you have the woman in charge of the Democratic Party, which is in charge of every facet of our government. And she's saying, we're not going to work with Republicans because working with Republicans is working with Trump. Is siding with Trump, and we can't side with Trump. So you're saying, and this is how I read that, you're okay with people dying, you're okay with the homeless crisis getting worse, you're okay with the business environment you're getting worse, you're okay with the drug crisis getting worse, and all of that because you are so focused on this one man, defeating this one man, hating this one man, and you're completely unable or unwilling to separate that one man from the many, many good Republican lawmakers in our state who are our fellow citizens, who have introduced common sense bills to help tackle some of our crises. But you're telling the people of your party that if you side with them, you're siding with Trump. Shameful. A level of division that should be acceptable to no one. And this is coming from someone who doesn't particularly like Donald Trump, as you guys know. I bring it up all the time. But I can look at him and say, that's not the guy who I want to be the president. But I can also tell you with certitude that he is miles and miles apart from our fellow citizens who happen to be Republicans, who have day jobs, who were also elected by the constituents in their district to serve the people in Olympia. And Shasti Conrad, if you cannot tell the difference, if you cannot set aside your disdain for Donald Trump in order to work with your fellow citizens and encourage members of your party to work with Republicans to fix some of the things that are vexing this state, man, you don't belong anywhere near the position that you're in. You shouldn't be able to influence policy one iota. And you just showed everyone your true colors, in case it wasn't already crystal clear. Coming up next, we talked about Puget Sound Energy saying that we all needed to reduce our usage over the weekend. Well, as we were all freezing our butts off, being told by PSE and also wasn't just PSE. I know out in Spokane County, power companies out there were telling people to do the same thing. So as all that was happening, a Democratic state representative was busy sending emails about her bill, which would phase us away from natural gas. We'll discuss and be joined by the Building Industry Association of Washington. But first, take some time, 1 hour of your day, 1 hour of your day this month to take the First Mark Challenge. You absolutely will not regret it. First Mark Insurance has been doing this for a long time, and there's never been a better time to have an insurance broker. It's someone who's on your side when you're dealing with the insurance companies, when you're shopping for insurance. They're doing it for you, and you never pay them a dime. Mike and I are now members of the First Mark family. They handle everything for us. It is such a relief. We got better insurance for the same price. We never would have been able to do that on our own. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, says another good reason to get an insurance broker now in this environment is because some of the crime that we're seeing. Or, you know, you have insurance companies who, at the end of the day, they're going to look out for their bottom line. And if you file a claim when maybe you should have just paid out of pocket for that little claim, they might drop you in an instant. And that's why it pays to have someone like First Mark on your side.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss. So like a windshield loss.
Sure.
Right? Just a little ding in your windshield. And they come in and we don't have a carrier that will take them.
For a ding in their windshield.
Right, for a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already, but it's just, I'm just saying, there's never been a better time to be a broker because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
And again, and this is one of our advertisers that just sells itself because costs you nothing except a little bit of time. You could save money. And then you have an expert on your side to navigate the insurance industry. Insurance is something you need anyway. So why not have someone like Dave Taylor and his team at Firstmark handling all of it for you for free? Take some time to do the Firstmark challenge today. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Make sure you let them know that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. Okay. We talked about this on the show yesterday. You have all seen the emails. What is the, Nicole, we got emails from people in Spokane. What's their energy company called? Avista?
I believe so. Avista, that sounds
right. Is that it? Something like that. Yes. I just wanted to know, you're not left out. We know that you were also suffering under the strain and shame of wanting, you know, your energy company wanting you to turn your power down. So it wasn't just Puget Sound Energy, but obviously in this area of the state, that's where we got our emails from. So Puget Sound Energy, during our cold snap, had sent out some emails asking politely, not demanding, but asking people politely if they would help reduce strain on the system. They said things you can do include setting your thermostats at a lower setting, limiting the use of hot water, such as dishwashing and clothes washing, dryers, and other appliances. And in fact, some people who had opted into this program that allows them to, like, change your thermostat. They saw their thermostats changed by, you know, the big forces, big, you know, and that freaks me out. I'm sorry. I'm just never going to do that. I care way too much about being comfortable in my home to let some outside force change my thermostat. So anyway, now picture this and like the timing of this. So this is happening. We're all cold. Our energy companies are telling us that there's a strain on the system. They're asking you during the coldest stretch of the year to turn your thermostats down. Like, things aren't going well, right? So Sunday afternoon, around 5 p.m., State Representative Beth Dolio, who's a Democrat representing the 22nd Legislative District, she sends out an email to some of her fellow lawmakers and then some stakeholders in this issue, reminding them about what's coming up in her bill, House Bill 1589. And she's talking about, and it's a nice email. I mean, if you know, and she's sort of like, hey, I understand there's a lot of concerns about some aspects of this bill. I want to continue to have conversations moving forward, da, da, da. Perfectly nice email. The issue is that House Bill 1589 is about weaning the state off of natural gas. And so here we are in this, and perhaps moving toward a place where Puget Sound Energy, if you get your natural gas from them right now, they no longer have to serve you in the future. Even, you know, there's no like grandfathering in. So think about that for a second. We're in the middle of this cold snap. All this is going on. And she's focused on sending out emails about this bill that would put us in an even more difficult position by saying, okay, we're going to do the opposite of diversify our energy needs, and we're going to, into the future, restrict the kind of energy that you can use, which in a cold snap like this would be absolutely devastating. So we asked Jan Heimbaugh, who we've had on the show before with the Building and Industry Association of Washington, to talk a little bit about obviously getting this email at the day and time that this email came out and sort of the frustration of that, but also about how this would impact the building industry. I will note, poor Jan. We literally caught her this morning to tape between meetings in Olympia. And she, I guess it's kind of fitting for the story. She stood outside in the cold and talked to us about this email.
We think it's completely heartless, or maybe not completely, but a bit heartless and a bit obtuse to suggest this on the coldest day of the year across the state while people are cold and without energy. Why would we remove an energy source from our grid system, which is clearly over capacity now? We should be thinking about how to add new energy sources so that we can keep residents warm and safe and alive in cold snaps across our state.
Yeah, we say this as Jan's freezing her butt off outside the Capitol, reporting from, sorry, there's no gas heat there to keep you warm. We will keep this brief. I guess there is a little bit of, tone deafness where when people are freezing, we've been told, you know, limit your use to send out this email about a bill that, you know, would strip people of options, essentially. I guess, you know, if our system today, if natural gas was not an option today, what do you think the impact would be?
Well, I think that most of our state this weekend would be cold and out of power, not be able to turn stuff on. There's a lot of options here, but like we didn't have enough power with natural gas this weekend. We just didn't. And our entire state's grid had that capacity issue. And so people will be cold, people will die. What happens when people are cold, they are willing to do anything to warm up. And when you are really cold, that means you do some not the wisest things for your health. So you are starting those wood stoves that we have made an effort to reduce because they produce particulate matter in the air, which is not healthy necessarily. So we're going to move back to wood stoves that haven't been in use for years and years, or people are going to do something even dumber or even worse for their health and pull stuff into their house and, you know, barbecues and have CO poisoning. It happens when we have cold snaps because people get so cold, they're willing to do anything and don't realize the health risks that they have. We really need to protect our energy sources and ensure that people can stay warm and healthy when it's freezing cold outside.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Just to play devil's advocate, you know, they're talking about this transformational change to the system, and I've seen numbers about, you know, to 2050, which is a long way away. Are they working on anything that would strengthen the system, you know, in the eventuality that you take away those options?
There's a lot of conversation about, you know, expanding wind power and solar panel, and those are all reasonable options to expand capacity and grid options. The issue is they are also not consistent sources of power, and so they're not reliable. On Saturday and Sunday, our wind power went down to nothing. Wind wasn't blowing. And so how do you create energy when the load is high because people are turning up their thermostat because it's 17 degrees outside? There's a consistency issue. Solar is not working when it's dark outside, and it's dark in the winter months. And so you're not producing as much power as you can. And solar, it's sunny right now, but you know it gets dark early, so you have less of a window to produce actual consistent power through those issues. I think there's lots of conversations about renewable natural gas and like getting those things working. So we're not only reducing our carbon load, which is an important piece of the puzzle, but we're expanding capacity with consistent, reliable energy sources. And when we don't need consistent, reliable energy, let's ramp up our use of the carbon-free options. But you know, we also have this conversation around hydropower, which is cheap and affordable and reliable power too. And taking out dams removes pieces of that too. So this is a big, broad policy. We should be not removing pieces of energy from our system. And this weekend was a prime example of why we can't do that.
Yeah, and it does seem like there's this pattern of cart before the horse, like, oh, ideally let's do this, but let's do it now before we're ready. And it just seems like not good governance. We'll end with this. What impact, if this bill passes this year, 1589, what impact does it have on home builders?
It means that long term, or, you know, the idea is to have remove an obligation to serve by 2050. So it means that houses built today will not be able to put natural gas in because, you know, changing sort of the guts and the infrastructure of a house from a natural gas system to full electricity is more than just changing out the appliances. It requires sort of rewiring a house and repiping, I would say. So that's a, you know, $40,000 change over. So new homes now or houses that are being built now will not have access to that consistent power because we don't want to set up future homeowners to have to go back and remodel their house. 25 years seems like a long time away. 26 years, it's not that far away. That's a quick turnover, and in the life of a house especially.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, Jan, I think this is hilarious, and if I can set this up for people before we let you go, we made you set up your phone on a building and stand in the dirt to get this shot of the Capitol behind
you. That's right.
So I love that some people.
But it's so pretty.
I love that some people are looking at this crazy lady talking to a wall, standing in the dirt right now. Weirdo.
That's right.
No, I know you've got hearings and stuff and testimony to do today. We do appreciate you taking a few minutes between them to talk to us.
Thank you so much, Brandy.
Yeah, we always like having Jan on. She's funny. Total trooper out there in the cold. As soon as we got on, Nicole's like, oh, your nose, you look so cold. Just to read real quick from a line from House Bill 1589, which, as Jan said there, it's like, okay, you know, we can't just leave people, for lack of a better phrase, out in the cold. We can't have no backup in an emergency situation. And we'll end the show today talking about more issues with electric vehicles in the cold. No one's saying that we don't want to help the environment. No one's saying that you don't want cleaner energy. But that can't be at the expense of it actually working for people. And that's sort of where the breakdown seems to be. So in this House Bill 1589, it says an act related to supporting Washington's clean energy economy and transitioning to a clean, affordable, and reliable energy future. One of the lines in it says, no large gas company that serves more than 500,000 retail natural gas customers in the state of Washington on June 30th, 2023 may furnish or supply gas service to a residential location that did not receive gas service or did not file applications for gas service as of June 30th, 2023. And so you're really, as Jan said there, when it comes to building new homes, the last time we had her on, we talked about this, you know, it would cost, it would make it so expensive to put in, because of some of the regulations, to put in the infrastructure you need if you want to run gas appliances, for instance. And then on top of that, what would be the point? If you build a future home and they're not going to be able to get serviced with natural gas, then you would never put it in. So it's all just, again, it's kind of it goes back to this issue of just bad governance, poor governance, where cart before the horse, you've got all these great ideas that you want to put into place, but in practice, they're just not working. They're simply not working. So thank you, Jan Heimbaugh, for joining us. Coming up next, the effort to get the legislature to adopt an initiative that would restore rational, reasonable police pursuits in Washington state just hit a roadblock, a big blue roadblock we'll discuss. First, I've talked a lot about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. And certainly, you know, I've talked about it in pounds. I lost 37 pounds, like almost back to my TV weight, which is great. But you know, there's so many more things that aren't that tangible weight loss that I've really benefited from. I mean, far more energy and enthusiasm to do things. And just looking at pictures, you know, from my wedding and being grateful that I sort of felt like and like looked like myself during my wedding. I mean, that kind of stuff you really can't measure in numbers, and just a lot of gratitude that I took on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan when I did. If you've been thinking about it, I highly recommend at least scheduling a 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan. Not every weight loss program is right for every person. This might not be the program for you. There are a lot of options out there. But if you are carrying around weight that maybe you're just not used to carrying around, this program lets you cut that excess weight really quickly. I lost most of it in just 60 days. And then they put you on a maintenance plan that doesn't feel like a lifelong diet, that is really easy to follow. So start today by simply making an inquiry. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com is totally free to do. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com takes 15 minutes. You can ask Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team any questions that you might have. All right, Democrats in Olympia have rejected a motion that would have fast-tracked a police pursuit initiative over for a hearing. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, last Friday, the first of six Common Sense initiatives to go to the legislature was officially certified by the Secretary of State's office. So that begins the process of the legislature considering it. Reasonable Police Pursuits is as the sponsors of it call it, Initiative 2113. What it would do is it would just put our police pursuit law back to how it was before everyone panicked in 2021 in the name of race and social justice and completely ruined it. So you would have individual police departments who can really use their judgment in deciding whether pursuing often violent, dangerous criminals is in the best interest of public safety or not. More than 400,000 Washingtonians signed this initiative. Obviously, it was certified because they determined that there were, in fact, enough signatures to make it valid. And so the question is, okay, what's going to happen from here? And then we talked about at the beginning of the show how a second initiative has now been certified to repeal the cap and trade program. And then I'm sure the other four are going to be as well. So the options, as you know, as we've discussed, are the legislature adopts it and just says, okay, the people want this, at least 400,000 of them. We think this is good. We're going to adopt it and it's going to become law. The other option is they come up with some alternative. They send them both to the voters to decide in November, or they just ignore it. They do nothing with it. And then the voters get to decide in November. I have said, though, that I thought if any of the six initiatives was likely to be adopted by the legislature, it would be this one for a variety of reasons, which I will touch on momentarily. But besides all that, the Washington State Constitution really places a high value on these initiatives to the legislature, saying this is the voice of the people. And when the legislature gets one of these initiatives, according to Article 2, Section 1A of the state constitution, such initiative measures shall take precedence over all other measures in the legislature except appropriation bills, and shall be either enacted or rejected without change or amendment by the legislature before the end of such regular session. Shall take precedence. So what that tells me is the second this thing was certified, the majority party and the minority party should be getting together deciding what are we going to do with it. If we're going to reject it, fine. But it shall take precedence over everything else except bills having to do with budgetary issues. So Drew Stokesbury, who is the House Republican leader, he made a motion on the floor to fast track this thing to committee. Let's get this thing. It shall take precedence. Let's get this thing to committee. Let's have a hearing where members of the public, where subject matter experts can come in, can testify about why the legislature should adopt it. Here's what he said, and here's what happened.
As indicated by this motion, it would allow for the limited suspension of rules to instruct the Public Safety Committee to immediately promptly hold a public hearing on House Bill 2113. There's two reasons we should suspend the House rules to add those instructions to the committee, Mr. Speaker. First, we have a moral responsibility to the 420,000 Washingtonians who signed the initiative to give them a voice and an opportunity to explain to the committee why they signed that initiative and allow the legislature to consider allow that committee to consider the measure. More importantly, Mr. Speaker, we have a constitutional responsibility. As you may or may not know, Mr. Speaker, Article 2, Section 1A of the state constitution has the phrase that initiatives to the legislature shall take precedence over all other measures before the legislature other than budget bills. So, Mr. Speaker, this is a fantastic opportunity to ensure compliance with the Constitution by elevating the importance of this initiative. I fully understand that we don't normally instruct committees to hold hearings. We leave that in the discretion of the committee itself. But by this body instructing the committee to hold the hearing, I think in my mind we would have complied with the constitutional requirement that these initiatives shall take precedence over all other measures. I recognize that suspending the rules is not something that we should do lightly, but it's also not something that we do irregularly, Mr. Speaker. In fact, we suspend the rules quite routinely. Anytime we want to work after 10 p.m., we suspend the rule that does not allow us to otherwise work after 10 p.m. Anytime that we want to move a bill from second to third reading in the same day, we suspend the rules for that. So it is quite common for this House to suspend the rules for limited purposes. That's what this initiative would, that's what this motion would do, allow us to suspend the rules to ensure that this important initiative signed by 430,000 Washingtonians receives a hearing in the Public Safety Committee. I urge a yes vote.
A roll call vote has been requested. The Speaker's about to open the roll call machine. The Speaker has opened the roll call machine.
Mr. Speaker, there are 38 yeas, 58 nays, 2 excused.
The motion is not adopted.
Right along party lines. All the Republicans voted to allow the motion to fast-track this thing to committee because the Constitution of our state says it should be a priority of the legislature. All the Democrats voted against it. And as Representative Stokesbury said, they suspend the rules for all sorts of things. They suspend the rules to be able to continue to debate late into the night, which happens every legislative session. And he thought that this was, and he, by the way, and I got in touch with him. I just wanted some information about what led up to this. This was not a surprise that he had let Democrats know that they were going to make this motion. So it's not as if Democrats were blindsided by it or caught off guard by it. They just don't want, first of all, the Republicans in the minority to dictate what's happening on the floor in motions and stuff. But they also, they just don't care. And I think that is reflective of House Speaker Lori Jenkins and what she said when I asked her about the initiatives that were going to be sent to the legislature.
I guess I'll just make a few comments about this. I'm very saddened when I think about why the initiative process was established in this state, have a populist approach it was really like the big railroad barons that folks didn't want taking over the state, and they wanted the people to be able to legislate. So now what do we have is an ultra-wealthy multimillionaire buying his way onto the ballot and putting initiatives on the ballot that are going to benefit his ultra-wealthy status. That said, they're there. So I think we have to deal with them.
Yeah, so you have the most powerful Democrat in the state legislature who thinks that little of the initiative process, who thinks that little of the hundreds of thousands of Washingtonians who came out to sign these initiatives, who thinks that they were misled by some millionaire who's doing this to line his pockets. Lori Jenkins, tell me how it lines Brian Haywood's pockets for him to help restore reasonable police pursuits. Now, one of the initiatives has to do with the tax on capital gains. Certainly that would impact Brian Haywood and any other wealthy Washingtonian financially, but you can't say that of the other five. You simply can't. And so you have, again, the House Speaker who thinks little of this initiative process. Is it any surprise in the world that Democrats would all reject an effort to fast track this thing to a hearing to give you and I and whoever else wants to talk a chance to discuss why it's important, why public safety is important? So, you know, Constitution of the state be damned, Article 2, Section 1A be damned. This thing is supposed to take precedent. They don't care. They're focused on their pet projects, like some of the bills that we've discussed, trying to get Donald Trump off the ballot, trying to get their political enemies off the ballot, trying to ban you from using gas-powered lawn care devices. They've got their twisted priorities. State constitution be damned. I asked this of subscribers in our daily show poll on Patreon and Locals, what you want the path forward here to be. So since 2113 has been certified, would you prefer that the legislature adopts it? Or would you just prefer that the thing goes to voters? And by far, people are saying that they'd prefer that the legislature adopts it. And I get that sentiment. It's a lot less messy, right? And it's a lot less expensive for the state of Washington. And it could go into effect right away. So then you're talking about, you know, several months where police can then, you know, take reasonable measures to protect the community. Whereas if we'd have to wait till November, then that would be pushed back a little bit. Travis Eberle says, I'd love for the legislature to take this up, but they won't because ideologically it gets in the way of good governance for the fringe left. Yeah, and it would create a stir if you had Democrats in Olympia. There would be progressives and socialists up in arms over this, maybe even literally after all the things we've seen from them. Michelle says, why wait? It needs to be in place right now over on Locals. Weisscastle says, with a motion, I picked voters because I want to know if the people support the police or not. Two, I don't trust the legislators to not try to water it down again. They could try to water it down, but if they change it fundamentally, it has to then also go to voters. So they can't just get in there and make it irrelevant and then act like they did something. That won't cut it. Annette says, whichever way it gets restored the fastest, let's not complicate things any further. I also do want to check if I have any. Okay, great. Here's my thing on this, and it's not going to be popular. Send it to voters. Lawmakers in Olympia, I don't care. I do not care what the majority party wants to do with it at this point. After I heard Lori Jenkins say that she was saddened by the initiative process, you send all six of those freaking things to voters and watch what happens. I love it. I love every second of it, especially police pursuits. You know why? Because there is a very strong Republican candidate for governor in Dave Reichert who has a law enforcement background, who's running on a platform of law and order. I would freaking love to see reasonable police pursuits on the ballot next to Dave Reichert and see how that helps him against Bob Ferguson. Please. Every second of every day. So you know what, Democrats in Olympia, I'm actually begging you. Don't do anything with these initiatives. Don't touch them. Don't give them hearings. Don't give them votes. Don't comment on them in the media. Completely ignore them. And let's watch and see what happens in November. I'm telling you, it's going to be a great year. All right, coming up next, we're going to get to some national news. We'll talk a little bit more and dive into what happened in Iowa. Vivek came out after the fact, called Trump, endorsed him, which is interesting. And then Nikki Haley had a bewildering statement that Nicole and I just simply cannot make sense of. But first, I've got some good news. Our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is having another one of his Know Your Risk webinars coming up later this month on January 25th. It's at 3:30 p.m. Thursday, January 25th, and it's completely free. And I will tell you, you know, we talk with Zach and his team so much about 2024 having the potential to be just a wild ride with the election, with misinformation out there. So risk management has never been more important. And you really have to ask yourself, how confident are you that your portfolio is protected, especially if you're in retirement or nearing retirement? So again, Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham will have his live 2024 preview Thursday, January 25th. You know, and I think you can learn about Bulwark Capital's risk management strategy specifically, but also learn a little bit about their expectations for 2024 in the process. So Thursday, January 25th, you can register right now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Seats are limited, so make sure that you sign up ahead of time. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Speaking of past performance not guaranteeing future results, Donald Trump lost in 2020, but I'll tell you what, in 2024, that might be the all-time comeback for the former president. Are there people I'd prefer to see? Yes. But if Iowa is any indication, Donald Trump has a lot of support still amongst Republicans. So in the Iowa caucuses, it went Trump, DeSantis, Haley, and then Vivek. So after it happened, Vivek decided, I'm going to drop out. And that kind of was coming. I mean, he had been decreasing in popularity. He drops out of the race, afterward endorses Donald Trump.
As I've said since the beginning, there are two America First candidates in this race. And earlier tonight, I called Donald Trump to tell him that I congratulated him on his victory. And now going forward, he will have my full endorsement for the presidency. And I think we're going to do the right thing for this country.
Yeah, so he's also appearing in New Hampshire alongside Trump for an event. Some people are saying, oh, maybe he'll pick Vivek as his VP. He's not going to. He's absolutely going to pick a woman for his VP. And in fact, the more I think about it, I think he's probably going to pick Kristi Noem. Mm-hmm. Or Elise Stefanik in New York. Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, or Elise Stefanik, the congresswoman out of New York. I think Kristi Noem. And she's been like die hard in his corner.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my bets.
Okay. I like it.
Okay.
I said, who did I say? Romney. But.
Wait, you said Mitt, he'd pick
no,
Mitt Romney?
Huckabee. Sorry.
Huckabee Sanders. That's possible sorry. Too. I just yes. think she's too much in Trump's. They're the same orbit. They're the same, you know, she worked
probably
for him,
right.
All that stuff. Who does she bring in? I don't think she brings in anyone except maybe some suburban women. But
also the young girl in New York.
Elise Stefanik.
I think that's Elise?
I think that's who you're talking about. Yeah. All right.
I like
so,
young.
Nicole said that.
I did.
I didn't even say that.
And that wasn't his line. I think that was Clinton.
I didn't even say that. Wow, Nicole. Hey, get over your TDS, Nicole.
I mean, his wife is not his age.
That's true. Hey, that's true.
It's true.
Okay, DeSantis spoke. He blames the media for him, although he did outperform polling. Polling had DeSantis in third. He did better than that. He got second, but he still thinks had it not been for the media, he would have done better.
We love you, too. They threw everything but the kitchen sink at us. They spent almost $50 million attacking us. No one's faced that much all the way just through Iowa. The media was against us. They were writing our obituary months ago.
Let's be honest. The media is against anyone with an R next to their name. So it's not just you, Ron DeSantis. So Nikki Haley comes out after these results. She gets third, right? She was expected to get second. She says the oddest thing. And I had Nicole, I was like, Nicole, I've been seeing this clip on social media. You've got to go find the raw tape because there's no way. I thought people were taking her out of context because it was just that weird. So there was a clip going around. We added a little more context at the beginning of it because we backed the edit up a little bit just so you could hear it as she said it.
The pundits will analyze the results from every angle. We get that. But when you look at how we're doing in New Hampshire, in South Carolina and beyond, I can safely say tonight, Iowa made this Republican primary a two-person race.
But you got third. It's like, that's why I was like, that can't be in context. Made it a two-person race between Trump and DeSantis?
Maybe if she she didn't say tonight, maybe she said, you know, if she thinks she's going to come in so far ahead of DeSantis in all of those other states, that'll be a two-person race. Yeah. But
you can't say it after you got third, or else you're, is that your announcement that you're leaving the campaign? Very confusing. But even more unhinged and confusing than that was Joy Reid over at MSNBC, which we're used to just wild, wild statements. But I love how the only time Joy Reid will even come close to defending a Republican is if she can race bait in the process. And that's exactly what she did with Nikki Haley.
It's the elephant in the room. She's still a brown lady that's got to try to win in a party that is deeply anti-immigrant and which accepts the notion that you can say immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country. She's getting, you know, birthered by Donald Trump. And I don't care how much the donor class likes her, which will ramp up a lot, the better she does in New Hampshire. So it's still a challenge. I don't see how she becomes the nominee of that party with Donald Trump still around. I can't picture it happening. Maybe it could happen. Ron DeSantis' only argument for staying in it is he's the white guy, that he can still make the appeal to white people.
Yeah, that's the only argument Ron DeSantis has been making. Hey, I'm the white guy. I also love how she says, I don't see how she becomes the nominee of that party. You have an 80-something-year-old white guy as your nominee. I mean, what if you're trying to play the woke wagon, I guess I don't understand what you're saying there. But of course, I mean, they still hate Nikki Haley with the burning heat of a thousand suns. But if they can virtue signal and appear to come to her defense while also dunking on Republicans and calling them racist, then she's going to do it all day long. Now, Iowa is one thing for Trump to win in Iowa, and there could be a lot of arguments about choosing Iowa as sort of the starting point for the presidential campaign cycle. And, you know, Trump would never win, even in the Republican process, all the counties in Washington state. But there's a new poll that suggests that Trump is in a position to win all of California's delegates, which is sort of counterintuitive because typically you look at the West Coast states, and obviously he's not going to win California, but when you look at the primary process and where Republicans are at, Trump has been doing much, much better. I mean, they had this, and I hate when they put these little graphs on there, and I'm like, well, who made
but
the graph?
But it is pretty shocking.
Oh my gosh, he's 2/3 of likely Republican voters in California support former President Trump as his lead over his rivals continues to grow, because it had been fairly close between him and DeSantis and undecided voters. Haley never had much support in California, which I think is interesting. And then you've just seen him absolutely take off and create this distance in California.
Isn't that bizarre?
Places.
The only thing that has happened is that they've gone after him. Right. So if they would have just, it's so funny because I don't know if that's the goal, but if they would have just left him alone, he might have stayed right there and maybe somebody else could have emerged. But all they've done is attack him.
Yeah.
And it's just made his chances more likely.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting, though, when, you know, I think Republicans in our state tend to moderate themselves because, you know, they know that in a blue state, the idea that we need to go further to the right or become more conservative to win elections is a little silly. Although I do understand how it can have the opposite effect of, you know, and I think it has in Washington, of having this louder base on the further end of the right, because in states like Washington, Oregon, and California, that's where you get the fringe crazy leftists. And so in other states where Democrats are just sort of reasonable, rational Democrats, I don't know that you have this birth and this strengthening of the alternative to that, if that makes sense, of sort of the descent to that. So it doesn't surprise me in California, Oregon, and Washington that you do have a growing faction that is even more committed than ever to Donald Trump, because they've seen the true crazy end of the political spectrum and the absolute real Trump derangement syndrome from elected officials in those states, if that makes sense. Okay, let's get to questions and comments. Sharon Barber says, like Trump or not, he has a proven record that benefited all Americans. Bob Larson, we the people have created this. We the people need to fix this. Are these really the two candidates we have to choose from? And that's just the presidential race. Sanity must prevail. I agree. I can't believe that we're in this position, although I just encourage people to look less at the presidential race and more at the races that are happening locally at the statewide level that are going to have much more of an impact on your lives. The Democrats will try to tie them together, connect every Republican to Donald Trump. We saw that with Shasta Conrad. And so you just have to sort of resist the urge, regardless of how you feel about Donald Trump, to make decisions about other candidates based on Trump. Janelle Villegas, then should we just not vote? No, you should vote. You should vote. Just pick who you like, even if you do a write-in. It's not popular, but I've done a write-in. Matt Gilbert says, at Janelle, always vote. Not voting is just surrendering. Mandy says, always vote no matter the outcome. Everyone must do their part. Sometimes we can't see the forest for the trees, but it doesn't mean we don't count. Glenn Ripley says, how to effectively communicate that Republicans are not to be feared. Dees have been selling fear and found it to be very effective for their purpose. And, you know, I think that there is legitimate things to be fearful of. For instance, for Republicans, I think that there's legitimate fears around how Democrats have handled public safety. And whether it's stoking fear or just telling the truth, I mean, I do believe you can do tit for tat on that. It doesn't have to be a lie. It doesn't have to be hyperbole or gaslighting. But there's a lot of reasons to be fearful of the environment that Democrats have created. So you can use their same tactics against them. I would just encourage Republicans not to go to the length of being incredibly dishonest about it, as Democrats have. Lieutenant Dan says, heads up, Supreme Court will not review our state's capital gains tax. Next stop will be to lower the threshold down to 15,000 in Senate Bill 5335. Yeah, this just came down to, so the Supreme Court, you know, even though Washington State passed an unconstitutional tax on income in the capital gains tax, they called it an excise tax. No other state calls a capital gains tax an excise tax. The Supreme Court says it's not going to review it. It is going to further embolden Democrats. They have said all along the cap gains tax is about taxing the rich. Well, pretty soon it's going to be about taxing everyone's capital gains. Just you wait. Unless, of course, the initiative that is soon to be certified by the Secretary of State's office makes it to voters, and voters decide to repeal the tax on capital gains, which I really think is a strong possibility. Monique Hendricks says, I'm a black woman in Seattle, and I will definitely be voting for Trump. Jenna Cole says, rallied at the Kitsap County Courthouse with the filing to remove Trump from the ballot, which is totally unconstitutional. Sounds like it won't prevail there. On Puget
that's
Sound.
That's dedication, man.
That she is dedication.
She got out there and did that.
In the cold, too. Love that.
Yeah.
Puget Sound Energy, Melinda Cito says, keep people desperate and they're easier to control. Yeah. Their government's going to control you anywhere you allow them to. So handing over your thermostat to the government, I guess I don't get it.
I don't either.
Are you thinking you won't be home and they can do it? Are you thinking that, I don't understand, because if you're home and you can turn it down and you care that much about regulating energy consumption, then you would turn it down.
Do it yourself.
Why do you need the government to do it for you, or PSE to do it for you, rather? That's very strange.
Well, they give you like $5 off your bill if you let them control it.
I'm sure they do.
That's how you get
people. Yeah, I'm sure they do. Dee says, about 20 years ago, my sister's Girl Scout troop brought their grill inside when the weather was icky. They got CO2 poisoning. Shocker. Oh my gosh, did some of them die? Is that RD?
Yeah, that's RD, but I don't think that they died. I think they just had poisoning.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was stopped.
Yeah.
At least somebody came in and stopped that.
TZ Burton says, does the Republican legislature now have to sue the Democrat majority to follow the state constitution? I don't know how you do that. I mean, because what is Article 2, Section 1A, when it says that it should take precedence, I guess, how do you define what taking precedence means? Because they don't have to adopt it, right? They can reject it. So to me, taking precedence could mean that they really swiftly say, we're not adopting this. And then they've dealt with it quickly and then moved on to other things. So at least do that. At least do that. But I don't know who would hold them accountable if they felt like they weren't following that edict from the state constitution. All right, a couple more, because we are going to finish on time today. I'm going to be on Lars Larson at 105, if you care to tune in. Winton Dillard says, just when you think Nikki might make a good VP candidate, she starts having Seattle City Council moments. yeah, that was a weird one. It's a two-person race. It might be. On Leland Taylor says, I absolutely 100% support Trump, but I will vote for a never-Trumper in Washington State if it means we can keep Bob out of the governorship. Thank you.
That's in response to somebody saying that they won't vote for Riker because he's a never-Trumper. So
you know who else is a never-Trumper? Bob Ferguson.
I don't get
that weird sentiment. It's like you can get a lot of what you want, or you can get the opposite of what you want and need. So I would hope that if your candidate, who I'm assuming Semi Bird, does not make it past the primary, that you would strongly consider setting aside that sort of frustration over Dave Riker, who I don't think he was a Never Trumper. I don't think he was a member of the Never Trump train.
I think he just avoided it. I think he'll continue avoiding it, which is fine. In Washington, that's a right thing
to do. That's a good thing. That's how you win, right? I actually, I challenge you on the idea that he was like a Never Trumper in the same vein that Chris Vance was a Never Trumper. Mm-hmm. That he was very, you know, like joining organizations to push back against Donald Trump. There's a lot of Republicans in Congress who don't particularly like Donald Trump and just shut up about it. Now, you might feel like that's the coward's way out, but that's not a Never Trumper in my mind. Because I'm a Never Trumper then in that sense, if you're just talking about somebody who never supports him.
Right.
But I haven't been out there unhinged, like leading efforts to remove him from ballots and get him and, like get him taken away. I don't.
And give people time to for it to narrow down. Because, I mean, I have talked to a couple Never Trumpers who said they would vote for Trump.
You keep saying that, Nicole. Year. Trot him in. I think you're making it up.
I would love to trot her in.
Come on.
I would love to bring him in. But I know she won't. She'll get mad at me if I name her.
Oh.
But
that's convenient.
But
Nicole's starting to sound like a mainstream media reporter who's like, I have this blockbuster news from an anonymous source, but I cannot ever tell you who it is.
But she's lost so much of her retirement. She's like, I will vote for him. And she hated him more than anybody I know.
Money talks.
I know.
Money talks. Okay, what a fun show today. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Inslee stopped weeping yet. Somebody check in on him and we'll get to our closing sanity check. All right, it's not just the cold weather causing problems for electricity in Washington State. It's also happening in Chicago, where EVs were left frozen in parking lots and might now have permanent damage to their batteries that need to be replaced. I hate to laugh. Chicago 5 says electric vehicle owners face huge challenges amid Chicago cold snap. Quote, you have to come up here, wait 2 hours to get into the charger. They tell you it's fast, but then it takes 2 hours to charge your car, Marcus Campbell said. Several cars had to be towed away from the line on Monday as air temperatures struggled to get above 0 degrees Fahrenheit. Owners have been dealing with the issues around reduced battery life and range since temperatures began to plummet on Saturday. Quote, I think EV owners are discovering for the first time, and it's what gas car owners knew decades ago, that when it gets really cold, you don't want to get too low on your power supply. And that's what Mike always tells me, because I'm one of those people who all ride that empty. My gas tank is empty. I've got 40 miles then. What do you mean I have to gas up? I can go to the grocery store and all of this stuff before I do that, where Mike's like, always leave it on full. And he hounds me during the winter months. He's like, absolutely, you need a full tank of gas, because if you get into a difficult predicament, you're going to need it. And, you know, I guess the electric car charging people should have made sure that they didn't go out and about on the town without a full charge. But this cracks me up in Chicago in particular. Chicago's a cold place. We talked about how Washington has a temperate climate, so these cold snaps are very unusual. Not the case in Chicago. So I really don't know what would convince someone to get an electric car in one of the coldest cities in America. But this is also evidence that this system is just really not up to the level that Democrats in our state, for instance, are acting like it is. And it is insane to believe otherwise. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. One reminder, we now have three options for subscribing to the show. You can do it on Patreon or Locals, as people have been doing for the last 2 years. We just added subscriptions on X. Thanks, Elon Musk. We really appreciate it. So you can subscribe on X if that's easier for you. And you can get access to the same exclusive content we give our subscribers, like our Sunday show, Sundays with Subscribers, very aptly named. Also, our daily show polls and other content. So if you've been holding out and you just are like, I don't know what Patreon and Locals are, Brandy, I support you, but I don't want to start something new. X, formerly known as Twitter. Subscriptions are there. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We sure do appreciate all of you. If you have not signed up and you want to learn more about the show or even shop our merch store, undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. Everything you need in one handy place. Until tomorrow.